to this. So check this out. Not that. That's ugly. Okay. It's coming. There we go. Last service, I didn't have any children in here. Right now, I do. Jacqueline, do you mind coming up here and helping me with the illustration? Okay, good. All right, good. All right, good. So, what has been on my heart is we've been talking about silent times. It's just really my conversation with my wife and just thinking about my relationship with my children. And there's just been a lot going on inside of me. And it's been beautiful because a lot of you have heard me proclaim and talk out loud that I have tried desperately by the grace of God to be someone to my children that I didn't necessarily understand what it felt like. So between my birth father and my stepfather, you know, I was trying to be somebody to my kids, but it's been a learning process, a lot of mistakes. You can ask Tim Jr., the oldest. He says he was a guinea pig child, and he was, okay? But in the process of that, thinking about just silence and voices and impact, it's caused me, my wife was reminding me of some things this week about how I have been ever since Tim Jr. came into this world, that I wanted my children to trust me. I wanted my children to trust my voice. And I've got the chair up here because some of you know that it's funny how a set of stairs becomes this transitional place of trust and confidence. Some of you will know what I'm talking about. So Lori's looking, am I going to get up here right now? No. Okay. So picture the child, you know, first step, takes the first step on the landing and they feel like it's, you know, like they want to jump and they want to jump into your arms. They're only one step up, but it's one of those things like, you know, and you're just like, and so I can remember with all three of our kids in the step and in other things, what I would typically do, and Lori reminded me of this, I kind of forgot about it, but they would be up on the step or they'd be doing something. And what I would do is I would say, look at me. And I would make sure that I made eye contact. So Paul, you're my eye contact person. Or Charlie, I could go with you. Or Mitch, well, I got a lot of eye contact. Hey, Chris, that's what I'm talking about. But I would make eye contact and I would say, look at Dad, look at me. Do you remember any of this? Did you want to help me with any of this? No, okay. I'm just checking. So I would say, look at Dad, look at me in the eyes. And I would try to encourage them and help them get a glimpse of my love and my concern for them. So I would be there like, you know, ready. You know, sometimes your arms get tired because they're like all like excited. They want to jump and trust you. And they're standing there doing this for like 10 minutes. And really all I got to do is go like, and you catch them. There's really no jumping involved. It's one step. But I can just remember thinking back with talking with Lori that I would say to them, look me in the eyes. Don't look around. Don't look at anything else. And I can remember specifically saying, don't worry about the step. Don't look down. Look at me in the eyes. Listen to me. Dad loves you. Just, I'm going to catch you. I don't want anything to happen to you. And I would want them to learn to trust my voice and to be able to jump into my arms. And I can remember with all three of my kids, what I would say to them is I would say, listen to what I'm saying. Do you hear any fear in my voice? Regardless of what's going on around you, if you don't hear fear in my voice, then you don't need to be scared. Trust me, I'm going to look out for you. And then I would say honestly to them, if you hear fear in my voice, you be really scared. Okay? You be really scared because there's something to be scared about. So I use that as us to jumpstart our conversation this morning Because in this, remembering about our kids and thinking about how it was so important to me as a dad to be able to make eye contact and for them to be familiar and understand my voice, I have to ask us this morning, is God really silent in our lives, or are we simply distracted? Think about this. And there's this struggle that we all have, but I'm going to ask us as we get started this morning, is God silent, or are we just really distracted with other noises, voices, and sounds in our lives? So what I want us to do is jump into Matthew chapter 14, verse 22 through 33. Matthew chapter 14, 22 through 33. And I'm not going to read this whole passage. If you are not familiar with this story, with this record, with this event that took place, I want to ask you to go back and read it. So I'm just going to kind of give you a quick overview. So Jesus is doing amazing things. He's ministering to people. He sends his disciples. He's like, hey, take the boat and go on. I'm going to go up. I love this because he goes up into the mountain to be by himself and to pray. He needs time with Father. So he needs time with his Father. And so then all of a sudden, he comes in the night. And what's taking place is this storm has moved in. So these guys are on the water, and it's like, you know, everything's messed up. So all of a sudden they look out, and there's Jesus walking to them on the water. Well, most of us know that's not normal, okay? You don't, I mean, even if you, how many of you have barefooted before behind a boat, okay? You've done barefooting, all right? I used to love to do that. 45 miles an hour, it is awesome till you fall, okay? But anyway, I just know that walking out on the water is not normal, you know. So when the scripture says, and let's read it together, I think it's kind of funny because it's a little bit of a, it kind of seems like an understatement here. But look at verse 27. But immediately Jesus spoke to them saying, be of good cheer, it is I, do not be afraid. Now the reason he said that was because these guys were thinking that there's some supernatural anomaly coming that we call a ghost, a spirit or whatever. So they were a little freaked out. And so then Peter answers and said, Lord, if it's you, command me to come to you on the water. It's a litmus test. It's like, okay, if you really are who you say you are, then let me come to you. And Jesus says, well, come on, come. And when Peter came down out of the boat, he walked on the water to go to Jesus. Look at verse 30. But when he saw that the wind was boisterous, he was afraid. And beginning to sink, he cried out, Lord, save me. And immediately Jesus stretched out his hand. He caught him and he said to him, oh, you of little faith, why did you doubt? And when they got in the boat, the wind ceased. Then those who were in the boat came and worshiped him, saying, truly you are the Son of God. Now, what I love is it's easy for us to like microanalyze these people and their lives. I am so thankful for the record of scripture and the humanity that's represented. If any of you have been watching the Chosen series, isn't it awesome how when you watch these lives, you're like, well, that dude was a real person. He had real struggles. Like sometimes we read it and we're like, but they're saying here, you know, I love it. He calms the wind. He comes in on the water. They put two and two together and then they start worshiping him. Like, whoa, you really are. You really, it's like, duh. But don't we all have that same struggle when it comes to doubt? And what I want to remind you this morning, especially men. Men, can you hear my heart this morning? There's been a lot of things take place, and I'll call it the big church, over the last 10 years to basically emasculate and to take away real manhood. Peter was a real man. Okay, he worked in the fishing industry. He was a hard worker. He was an entrepreneur. He was a man's man, but he was just a natural, normal man. He was a real man. But what I want us to really focus on in Peter's life and in the life of others is that Peter, like so many of us, was bombarded by distractions. And please hear my heart this morning. Part of what I want us to delve into for just a few minutes is I want us to just think about the reality that I don't believe that it's really about God being silent and not speaking to us. I believe that with most of us, it's really about us being distracted. We can't hear his voice. We can't be zoned into him because there's so many other sounds and voices and noises that are clamoring for our attention. So I want you to just think about all throughout the scripture, there's so many examples of men and women in the Bible who battled distractions. Now, we don't typically use maybe this word, but when you think about it in this context, Samson. Was Samson a distracted man? If you know anything about Samson, you're like, yep, he was pretty distracted. He struggled with distraction. A type of distraction. How about Abraham and Sarah? Yeah, Abraham and Sarah, it was different, but Abraham and Sarah, they also struggled with distraction. Distraction based on unmet expectations. What about David? David battled distraction. And so from Genesis to Revelation, you're not necessarily going to find the word distraction. Now, the word distract in the King James, there's a type of that form of the word in Psalm 88, verse 15, and 1 Corinthians 7, 35. But distraction and being distracted is not a word that you're going to find from Genesis to Revelation. But the way that we use the word and what it means to us, you can see it all throughout Scripture. And what I would like to do this morning, I would like to follow a progression of maturing in Peter's life as an example for us. I want us to look at Peter and a little bit of an encapsulated overview and see how Peter battled distraction to help us understand the reality of the similarity of our struggles for our faith journey. Does that make sense? We must learn to hear the voice of God among all the distracting voices, sounds, and noises in our lives. Peter had to do the same thing. Everybody since has had to do the same thing. Now, we're going to jump back into Peter, but what I want to do is we're going to go back to Peter in the water in just a minute, but what I want us to do is just kind of look at, if you've never read Matthew 26, there's a lot of information in Matthew 26. So I want to highlight some points from Matthew 26. There's so many details in the history of this chapter, but Peter is front and center. If you haven't looked at this recently, and Peter basically says to Jesus, listen to what he basically says. He doesn't say these words, but Peter says, I will never listen to any other voice other than yours in my life. And Jesus, you can't tell me any different. Don't you just love Peter? He's bodacious. He puts his foot in his mouth. Can you imagine? He doesn't say these exact words, but when you break down what he says and the way he presents himself, he's basically saying, no, Jesus, there will never be another sound, voice, or influence in my life other than yours. I love you. You've got the wrong guy in what you're saying about me. Are you tracking with me? Okay, so let's just kind of go back and do an overview after he makes those profound statements. Let's just do a little bit of an overview of what happened. So first off, Jesus is going to go to the Garden of Gethsemane. He's going to pray. And Peter is one of the three guys. He says, hey, can you come over here a little bit further? And he pours his heart out and says, I am feeling like a death experience. Will you pray for me? What's Peter's response? That's a question. It'll help me a lot if we have some interaction. Okay? So this is almost like a question and answer. You get to participate. So Chris, what happened? When they went into the garden to pray, and Jesus pulled them aside and said, hey, can you pray with me for a little bit? What did he do? Snoozeville. How many times? Yep, three times. So remember what Peter said? No. I'm going to love you. Well, let me get my sleep. All right, and then they go from there, and then they go into a situation where Judas comes with this rabble group with swords and clubs, and they come to take Jesus. And what's Peter's response there? Now, I'm going to ask you, Charlie, can I pick on you? How do you take a sword and cut a guy's ear off? Either you're a sous chef or something didn't go according to plan. Now, Sam Gerhardt in the last service, he was, well, like, we were talking through it, and Sam goes, yep. And then I asked him, he goes, nope, yep. So did he go bottom up or did he go up down? I believe that you need to look at that story because I believe that there's a lot more here. I don't believe that a guy like Peter was trying to be a sous chef. I believe that God intervened because how do you take an ear off without getting a shoulder, neck? That, I mean, that's just not that same region. If I'm swinging, Tim doesn't have a break on that thing. That's in the cartoons. So anyway, here's Peter. What I love about Jesus, if you look at the story, do you notice that Peter doesn't get maligned by Jesus? He just basically said, come on, man, put your sword away right now. Because he understood what was going on. Then we go from there. Now, you got to keep in mind. So listen to all these things that are distracting Peter from what Peter had said to Jesus early on. So now here they are. They lead him away. They're taking him before the Sanhedrin. They're taking him in a hostile situation. And he's in this area, and he's got all these different voices, all these different people saying everything. And then you have a lady that comes over and says, oh, I know who you are. How does Peter respond? I don't need you to vote with your hand, but how many of you this week you've struggled and you've responded in a cursing fit, saying blankety blank blank things in your anger and your response? This is a similar situation in how Peter responds, vehemently denying the very Jesus that he had made these great claims about. Why? Because he was distracted. And a lot of times we don't use the word distraction for these situations, but I believe that Peter, just like on the water, that he started looking around at everything else and he got his eyes off of where his focus needed to be. He was distracted. So, yeah, I agree. So from there, I want to point out the beauty of how God works with us. If you've never looked at what Peter penned in 1st and 2nd Peter, our proclamation this morning was taken from some of the first verses of the first chapter of the letter. To see his growth and his maturity should be an encouragement to us. Because Peter represents the very same struggle that we all have. We battle distraction. So, as Jesus asked Peter, I want to ask us this morning, why do we doubt? Where does our doubt come from? Or let me ask it another way. Why are we so easily distracted by the voices, sounds, and noises in our lives that take us away from Jesus and create doubt? Because see, in my mind, for me personally, they go together. Now, some of you know, some of you have bought me t-shirts, and you've got me ADD, squirrel shirts, all these kind of shirts. When I wear my t-shirts out that you've provided for me, I have the best conversations. I have this lady at Lowe's that when I wear certain, I'll go to the line and she'll see me and she's like, I love your shirt. I just think that's the best. I'm like, yeah, me too. What? What were you talking? Were you talking to me? And she always just laughs. She laughs every time. She's the sweetest thing. But what I'm trying to say is I already have distraction issues. Some of you are like me. You already have distraction issues. But what we have to do is we have to come to the point where we realize and come clean that it's our distractions that create some doubts that we have because we're not able to keep our eyes on Jesus and we're not able to hear the voice of God. So let's jump back into Matthew chapter 14. I want to point out a couple of things in verse 30. But when he saw the wind was boisterous, he was afraid and beginning to sink, he cried out saying, Lord, save me. How many of you have ever been on a body of water when a huge storm comes in? We used to run a Christian camp and conference center on the Chesapeake Bay, And it was right at the point where the road and the West Rivers converged into the bay, and 50% of the property was waterfront. When a storm would come in on the bay, obviously you could see some things, but one of the things that really freaked you out, if you happen to be out with a group of kids on a sailboat, and we had some rather large sailboats or a big catamaran, the way that the wind would pick up and start making noise, it was scary because you knew that there was power to back up the noise and it could wreak havoc and do damage. I want you to understand that even though we're talking about wind, the wind was making a lot of noise. It was making a lot of sounds. And it was able to take Peter's focus off of the very reason that he had asked to get out of the boat. And let me just say this. For some of you, you beat yourself up so bad. We need one another because we all struggle with distraction. Peter is doing something that no human being had done up to that point. Jesus had walked to him on the water, but Jesus had responded by breaking human tradition, and now he was walking to Jesus on the water. This is a supernatural interaction. There's incredible things taking place. But in that moment, he got distracted, and he looked away, and it created doubt. That's why Jesus asked him. So think about this. Boisterous in the Greek, it's talking about of inanimate things, a strong equivalent to violent. So the wind and what he was experiencing was a violent, tumultuous situation. Merriam-Webster says noisily turbulent. So it's making a lot of noise and there's turbulence. Our definition of distraction, let me read it to you. Think about this. Something that distracts, an object that directs one's attention away from something else. Like she turned off her phone to limit distractions. One created a distraction while the other grabbed the money. But it says even amusement. A harmless distraction, a book of word puzzles, or others' distraction. The act of distracting or the state of being distracted, especially, listen to this, mental confusion driven to distraction by their endless chatter. I'm just saying right now, this is not me being a pastor like, oh, the phone is sin. I'm not saying the phone is sin. What I'm saying is this is, can be a huge blessing. I communicate with a lot of you, letting you know I love you, I'm thinking about you, I send you a verse, I send you an encouraging thought via this device. But I also want to say that when we are naturally as human beings prone to distraction, this has ramped up the game times 1,000. And I will say this to a couple of you here this morning. This has become an idol and a controlling sin issue and addiction in your life. That's when something goes past being a distraction and being a controlling element in your life to where that you can't accomplish what you want to accomplish because you're tethered to this. Okay? Distraction is even more real today than it has ever been. Parents, I want to encourage you at this point. You have to help out in this area. And if that means that you need to help yourself out and have your spouse help you out, whatever, we all need help because distractions are getting worse than they've ever been. So think about this. Pastor Chris last week was honest and raw about the way he, like most of us, chose to deal with his emotional disconnectedness. He chose something to make him feel good. I believe that most of us do the exact same thing in some shape, form, or fashion. And I believe that some of us, and even as Pastor Chris talked about his struggles, a lot of times we go to something simply because it's a distraction and we feel relief because we're distracted. So think about distraction. A lot of us, we distract ourselves. We don't know how to deal with certain things, so we're looking for distractions. And then we have others in our life that naturally distract us. we're distracted by other people. Now, some people mean to be a distraction, but most people, they don't mean to be a distraction, but we have people in our lives that are a distraction to us. Some of you, there's some ungodly friendships that you've tried, you've prayed, but every time you place yourself in that situation, they become a stumbling block or a huge distraction because you really are trying to keep your eyes on Jesus. But then I just want to remind you, and some of you, maybe this is a new concept, the forces of evil strategize to distract us. Distraction is a strategic game plan of the Antichrist, anti-God, or evil forces of this world. Because a man, a woman, a boy or girl, a child that is able to keep their eyes on Jesus and able to hear the voice of God and feel connected and not feel like God is being silent in their lives is a threat to the forces of evil. I don't care what your personality, background, struggles, you are a threat to the forces of evil. Every single one of us are prone to distracting voices. Do you realize that? Adam, you and I both have the same thing. Elijah, we both have the same thing. I could go person by person, man, woman, child, doesn't matter, college student, high school. Every single one of us are prone to distracting voices. Every single one of us. So why do we listen to other voices? I don't believe that for most of us, it's because we don't want to listen to God's voice. I believe that we all have some inner turmoil that's going on, that we are distracted and we listen to voices other than Father God. Let me just go through a list of potential causes. Fear. Fear distracts. Immaturity. Misunderstanding. Confusion. We're looking for comfort. We have burdens. Some of you, you're looking for distraction because your responsibilities and your load, the weight that you carry, is overwhelming. It's a coping mechanism. We're trying desperately to cope. But I also believe that this last category is that the pressures and allurements of this world system are powerful. Expectations of life and other people. Material accumulation and wealth. Achievement, recognition, and or fame. These all create pressures and allurements for distraction. But I do want to say that this last one, only wealthy nations or a wealthy people can be distracted the way that we are by hobbies and personal interests. Let's be honest, the church leaders in our nation rarely address these types of things. We make excuses for hobbies and personal interests distracting us from the gospel and kingdom work. So let me go back to my kids. It was important to me, and it's still important to me, for my children to learn my voice. Parents, grandparents, please listen to this, because for some of you, this may be a new concept, because this is not common teaching today. My children, our children, had to learn to listen, respond, and obey to my voice. It was a training process, but it started early on. It started early on. But it was a training process, because in times of emergency or difficulty, we believe that our children needed to identify my voice and respond without explanation, argument, discussion, or dialogue. And that has been removed within certain situations within our world. But when it comes, push comes to shove, there are times where I knew that our children needed to respond to my voice because it was a difficult, challenging, or dangerous situation. And it was not a time for conversation. It was not a time for me to explain my motives. They needed to listen to the voice that was looking out for them. Are you tracking with me? Here's why. A trusting response was my expectation because of a relational bond. Jason, come over here. My son, Tim Jr., and my daughters, I expected them to trust what I was saying because of the amount of time that I had invested, the love that I had shown, the sacrifice that I knew that they didn't understand because they weren't mature enough to understand my level of sacrifice because they're not adults. They didn't understand what it's like to be a parent, but there was an expectation that he was going to trust me. And even now, as I'm getting to know Jason, there's a certain level to where that he should trust me because of the friend that I have been to him. There's a relational bond. Does that make sense? Thank you, Jason. So, remember back when I started? When it first started, I may have been there for 10 minutes watching them like, I'm going to do it now. And they don't know how to say, I really want to trust you, but you haven't earned it yet, but I don't really trust you because I think you're going to drop me on my face. I know that you're my dad and you did all the other things. But they can't communicate all those things. But there's that level of will you just, but because of the relationship, then what's beautiful is my kids move from the first step to the second step to now they're wanting to jump from the landing. And I'm like, well, I'll try to catch you. And my wife is like, no, we are not doing that. And then they jump and I catch them and they follow me and we're all laughing. And she's standing over like, you're trying to kill our children. And me, I'm just like, oh, they're trusting me. You're laughing for good reason. Do you get what I'm saying? So let me tell you this. I believe what my kids say to me. But even my adult kids now, I don't understand it from what I've experienced, but I accept it when they say it to me. All three of my kids will call, and maybe my wife answers the phone, and they'll say, Mom, I love you, but can I talk to Dad? I just need to hear his voice. There's times in their lives where all they want to do is hear my voice. I don't totally get that because I don't know what that feels like. But I'm thankful that we've been able to build that relationship. And they'll say to me, your voice is just calming. I know you love me. So for us, please, please hear me this morning. It's not that God's silent. It's not that he's dead. It's not that he doesn't care. Most of us, we haven't learned how to focus on his voice, his words, that relational faith. We're distracted by all these sounds and noises and voices all around us. John chapter 10, verses 4 and 5. After he had gathered his own flock, he walks ahead of them. This is Jesus. And they follow him because they know his voice. They've learned to hear his voice. They won't follow a stranger. They will run from him because they don't know his voice. Hebrews chapter 4 and verse 15 says that our great Savior is sympathetic toward our human weaknesses. It says in Hebrews, he's our great high priest. He's the one that intercedes for us. You know what he knows about Tim Duggins? And it's taken me so long to understand this. He knows my weaknesses. He knows I'm easily distracted. I can be sharing the gospel. And last service, Kennedy Blue walked around the corner and I'm like pouring my heart out. And I'm immediately like, here, look, baby. He knows that about me. He knows how I'm easily distracted, just like he knows that you're easily distracted. So he's sympathetic toward that. But he also is trying to show us how to keep our eyes focused and our ears learn to hear his voice. 1 John chapter 2, verses 15 through 17. Do not love the world or anything in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father is not in them. For everything in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, comes not from the Father, but from the world. The world and its desires pass away, but whoever does the will of God lives forever. 2 Timothy chapter 2, verses 2 and 4. And the things you have heard from me, this is Paul. Paul is saying, the very things that you've heard from me in the presence of many witnesses, entrust to reliable people who will be qualified to teach others. So there's this process of hearing, learning to trust, and then passing on to other people that are going to have ears to hear too. Join me in the suffering like a good soldier of Jesus Christ. No one serving as a soldier gets entangled in civilian affairs, but rather tries to please his commanding officer. Do you understand that both of these verses don't use the word distraction, but they're both talking about being distracted? Lust of flesh, lust of the eyes, the pride of life, what we all struggle with. These are some of the three most powerful distracting forces that we deal with. But what he's also saying is just in the same way, a soldier has to learn to be focused and not be distracted by all the other things that are going on, or they will not be able to accomplish their mission by following orders. Luke 17, 26 through 37. When the Son of Man returns, it will be like it was in Noah's day. In those days, the people enjoyed banquets and parties and weddings right up till the time Noah entered his boat and the flood came and destroyed them all. I'm going to stop right there. You do realize that Noah was very focused and the majority of the people around him were distracted. They didn't hear, they didn't receive. Matter of fact, they mocked Noah. And if you're not familiar, Noah was not building the ark on the East Coast at a launch point near a jetty or a pier. Are you tracking with me? He's building this huge edifice where there's no water. So they're walking around, they're mocking him, they're making fun of him. The dude's an idiot. When you look back at how many years he worked on the boat, either he was obeying God or he was insane, one or the other. There was no middle ground. Either he's like, ooh, 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 or he heard the voice of the living God. Then you look at the next illustration. What is he reading the next illustration? Use the next illustration. And the world will be as it was in the days of Lot. People went about their daily business, eating and drinking, buying and selling, farming and building, until the morning Lot left Sodom. Then fire and burning sulfur rained down from heaven and destroyed them all. Yes, it will be business as usual, right up to the day when the Son of Man is revealed. On that day, a person out on the deck of a roof must not go down into the house to pack. A person out in the field must not return home. Remember what happened to Lot's wife. If you cling to your life, you will lose it. And if you let your life go, you will save it. That night, two people will be asleep in one bed. One will be taken, the other left. Two women will be grinding flour together at the mill. One will be taken, the other left. Where will this happen, Lord? The disciples asked. Jesus replied, just as the gathering of vultures shows there is a carcass nearby, so these signs indicate that the end is near. In both of these illustrations used, the majority of humans we're listening to the same voices. The same sounds, the same noises, the same voices. And it was not the voice of the living God. Some of you may need this little nugget of encouragement. If you are wanting to be surrounded by a majority group to feel connected and to feel affirmed, then I'm going to tell you some bad news. That Christianity is a minority view. It always has been. The majority view are all the other noises, sounds, and voices in the world, and that will, until the new heaven and the new earth, that will be the majority view. So we have to understand that and realize that for those of us that hear the voice of God, that are trying to learn to train our ears to hear his voice, to hear his words, we're not going to be the majority. And we have to take strength in that. And please hear me. Other countries and other brothers and sisters in other regions understand that. And that's why the church does not play games together. They come together to strengthen and fortify and build one another up because they know what they're up against. But us, we've been so distracted by all these other things. And then we can convince ourselves because we have 12 Bibles on a shelf, or because we have a Bible app, or because we have all these other things that we don't avail ourselves to. We kind of lull ourselves to sleep spiritually. But distraction is a huge thing for all of us. Luke chapter 21. I just want you to focus on 34 through 36, but you can read the whole chapter. Verse 34, watch out. Don't let your hearts be dulled by carousing and drunkenness, and by the worries of this life. Don't let that day catch you unaware like a trap. For that day will come upon everyone living on the earth. Keep alert at all times and pray that you might be strong enough to escape these coming horrors and stand before the Son of Man. I'm saying this not to condemn or judge, but to say that we all have distraction issues. And what we need to be helping one another with is addressing our distractions. A lot of churches talk about accountability programs and, Trey, will you be my accountability partner? Well, I'm not going to be accountable to anybody that I don't know a little bit and I don't trust and hasn't earned my trust. Accountability is a relational thing. So I do want to throw this out, that biblical accountability is your heart desire and your focus and your ears growing to the point where you realize certain distractions and struggles that you have, and you get to the point where you say, hey, Adam, hey, Woody, hey, Trey, hey, Paul. And I could go around the room and I say, hey, Chris, listen, man, I've been battling. Here's some distractions I've got. Can you ask me next Thursday how I'm doing? Because I'm at a point where I need to hear the voice of God like I've never heard before. And so will you just ask me how I'm doing? And some of you, your idea of church, you're like, whoa, dude, that's really invasive. But I'm going to ask you a different way. How committed are you to keeping your eyes on Jesus and hearing his voice amid all of the distractions? See, the church is not supposed to be a group where we're throwing stones at each other. We're putting each other down. We're like, oh, man, if you really love Jesus, you wouldn't be struggling with that. What kind of blah, 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 blah. No. The church is supposed to be a group where we look out for each other. We strengthen one another. We need to help one another. And when somebody comes clean with a struggle, we're honest enough to look at them and go, no, dude, I get that. Chris, we got the same struggles, don't we? How do you know that about me? Because we spent time together. You're able to hear my heart. You get what I'm saying? Whatever, I'm begging you this morning. I have distractions. You say, oh, Pastor Timmy, oh my goodness. I got a house with leaky pipes. I've got a yard that needs to be mowed. I've got beautiful trees that It seems like they need to be trimmed every week. I mean, we all have responsibilities and things that can become distractions if we're not careful. I've got mine. What I'm trying to say is whatever is keeping you from hearing the voice of God and keeping you from active faith relationship and keeping you struggle with doubt, please just own it, face it, deal with it this morning, come clean, and like never before, get some help, be focused on learning to hear the voice of God. For me, I want to be there for my kids till my last breath is taken. I want my granddaughters, when they hear Pop-Pop's voice, I want them to be comforted. I want them to be encouraged. I want them to be excited. I want, when my kids call as adults and they say to me, "Hey, Dad," and most of the time when they call, guess what? I don't give them great advice. I don't say a whole lot. You know what I do? I listen. And they're like, "Hey, Dad, thanks for listening. I just need to hear your voice. I need to bounce this off of you." And with this, I want to wrap things up. When they start telling me their problems, I don't go like, "You're an idiot. You got a master's degree. You went to school for that. Figure it out yourself. I'm trying to mow the lawn. I can't talk to you. It's a mower. Sorry. I'll call you back later." Or, "What in the world is your problem? We talked about this like 12 times over the last 10 years. Figure it out." I don't do that. And I'm a jacked up dad. Somebody here this morning, somebody hearing my voice needs to understand, how in the world do you believe that God looks at you that way? And yet we do. I'm a jacked up human being, and I want to be there for my kids in the best way. I want to hear their struggles. I want that relationship with them. God dwarfs every one of us in his love and care and concern for us. He's not trying to smash us. He's not trying to put us down. He wants to hear our hearts. He wants us to trust him. He wants a relationship. But we have to learn to deal with the distractions and hear his voice. In just a few minutes after we get done with these couple of songs, and the offering baskets are just going to be passed around in between the songs. But when we get done with the end of the service, some of us are going to be up here and we're going to do something a little bit different. If you need somebody to pray over you, pray with you, we just need a group prayer time, we're going to be up here after the service and we're going to pray with and over people. And we're going to pray over distractions. And some of you, you need to take the next step of dealing with your distraction and get somebody alongside of you. Not that's going to put you down. That's just going to say, "Hey man, how you doing? You focus on Jesus? You keeping your eyes on?" Sometimes when I ask people that, you know what it does for me? "Don't be a hypocrite. Are your eyes on Jesus?" "No, but they will be after I get off the phone." I'm serious. That's how it works. Because we're all struggling. Let's stand and think about these things as we sing praises to him.